WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Molly Dodd is having her baby next week. My guest is Blair Brown, who plays Molly in the TV series The Days and Nights of Molly Dodd. She also co-starred in the movies Altered States, One Trick Pony, and Continental Divide. Molly Dodd premiered almost 4 years ago on NBC, then moved to Lifetime Cable. This is the show's last season. Blair Brown once described it as a show for people who thought they'd end up yuppies, but didn't. The story of someone who reaches the midpoint of life and realizes a lot of her dreams aren't going to come true. Molly is close to 40 and lives alone. She's independent, but always yearns for what she doesn't have. She works, but it's always a job, never a career. And now she's about to have a baby. Molly was even going to marry the father, Detective Nate Hawthorne. But he died a couple of episodes ago in a restaurant after being accidentally served the food he was most allergic to, shrimp. Here's a scene from a recent episode, before Nate's death. Molly is assembling a crib while her mother watches disapprovingly. Molly's mother is always disapproving, but it's about to get worse when she finds out that Nate Hawthorne is the father. Nate is black.
You wouldn't remember how these things work, would you?
After 40 years, I don't think so.
Well, it's a lot harder than it looks.
Well, and it looks hard. It's times like these when you need a man around. Of course, the rest of the time, they're more trouble than they're worth.
Well, you may as well know there might be a man around here soon enough.
Oh, Davy is coming to help you put this together?
No. I talked to the doctor.
And?
Nate's the father.
Well, I suppose that's to be expected.
You know, you are doing a remarkable job of hiding the utter joy and excitement that you must be feeling right now.
This means that you two will be
Getting married, yes?
Molly, don't you think you're being just a little unrealistic?
Blair Brown, whose idea was it for you to have a baby in the Molly Dodd series?
When we were approaching this last season, I think a lot of us felt a bit stuck with Molly, that we had to deal with the baby issue at some point. If Molly is nearing 40, the business of having a baby or not having a baby, comes up, is important. And I felt very strongly that she should have a child, because I thought it would be interesting to follow a single mother, assuming that Molly would inevitably not be married and would not have someone in her life, since that's kind of been the character all along, that she's a very independent sort and an odd bird in some way, and that was really our journey, was to see a more solitary character than a lot of shows have. So I know I was very pro the idea. Jay Tarsus originally was not too keen. He said, "Do you realize that once we get saddled with a child, it becomes a whole other story?" But I think what happened is that writers then took that idea and really retained the original format, which is that it's a diary of this woman's reactions to the world, so that even in the shows now that where the baby, after the baby is born, it's not so much see Molly diaper a baby, see, it's more the reaction that she has to motherhood and how the rest of her life works with having a child.
Now, Molly Dodd started off on network TV,
mm-hmm,
and then ended up on cable. Did you find that there were things you could do on cable that you couldn't do on network?
Well, initially, that didn't seem to be so, because to be fair to NBC, they were really not very restrictive of us while we were making the show. The trouble we had with them was really always after the fact, the mean things they'd say about us in the press. But when we were making the show, there didn't seem to be really too much interference. Every now and then, Standard and Practices come in and wants to haggle about a word. But usually, we were able to hold our ground. What I found, actually, working in cable over time, was that when you know you're writing something for a network or producing something for a network, your own censorship really sets in. So you tend just to curb some of your ideas, thinking, this is really going to be a hassle if we want to do this, or that you just kind of bring the parameters in of what you want to do, and all of a sudden, the doors were wide open. Plus, you don't have that business of sitting down the next morning and looking at the Nielsens and, you know, moment by moment going, well, why did we lose the numbers here and why this? The cable is a whole different ballgame. They have ratings, but they seem to be less ratings-bound in what they're doing, and are really, we're genuinely more interested in the product and what we all thought and they thought was the most interesting way to tell the story.
Is there a story development that you did on cable that you think you would have self-censored had you still been on broadcast TV?
Well, the whole relationship that Molly has with Detective Hawthorne, because he's black and because she's white, would have been a thing, a deal at a network, whereas it seemed to me that we were able to this happens to be the person Molly fell in love with and who fell in love with her. And it was not a show about black and white. I think with the network, usually they have to treat it with a but kind of parenthesis around it all the time, like that's what this is about. And I thought we were able to deal with it in a much more relaxed way. It was just a story.
The character of Molly Dodd was written for you by Jay Tarsis, the creator of the series. I mean, he wrote the character for you. It was written around you. What are the ways that you think you're similar and different to the character that you've become so identified with?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Molly and I are actually very different in many ways. Jay had just been asked by NBC to do a series about a modern woman living in a big city, and he wanted to work with me, and they said fine, and so he and I went and talked a lot about all the things we didn't want her to be. We didn't want her to be much of a perfect person. We really wanted her not to be ambitious. We wanted her not to be a lot of the things that particularly, say, 4 or 5 years ago, were the images of women on television, these kind of 360-degree people who are careerists and fabulous friends and sexy wives and good mothers and loyal daughters. And, you know, there's not enough time, there's not enough hours in the day to be all those things. So we made her a person who was bad-tempered sometimes, or sometimes very close-minded, sometimes, you know, open-minded to a fault. We wanted to create a person who was a little more eccentric and in that way a lot more like real people. The parallels between me and Molly, I think what I discovered in doing it is that in a drama, you can actually be quite far away from yourself. You can, you know, gain weight, lose weight, accents, new hairdos, all these prosthetics, things like that. But oddly, when you're doing comedy, it's very close to your sensibility because I don't know how you act anything that you don't find funny. And because comedy really comes from your point of view, your worldview, and what, you know, what seems absurd to you and what seems serious and what seems worthy of mocking. I think it's actually much more revealing about who the person is in that way.
Blair Brown is my guest, and she stars in the TV series The Days and Nights of Molly Dodd. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Blair Brown is my guest, the star of the TV series The Days and Nights of Molly Dodd. Has television kept you away from having to worry about finding roles that you really wanted to play? You know, because you've had a steady gig.
Well, it's interesting, though, because the last 4 years I've worked with two writer-directors the whole time. I've worked with Jay Tarsis and with David Hare doing a play of his and a film of his. And now, you know, we finished sort of the end of the year and I'm sort of out in the marketplace again. And there's, of course, the initial panic. But I found that it was very interesting to go and work with other people and have other people see you differently. And that the security and the joy that I'd found in the last few years of working in these worlds, it was actually time to leave and to move on to others. And I found I've started writing now, and I've sold a project to NBC for a possible series that I may or may not be in, but I would certainly be producing and creating with Rick Dresser, who was one of the main was the main writer for Molly Dodd this year, and I find it's very interesting now. I'm coming from, because of to work on a series is a very different experience for an actor because you do know for an extended period of time where you're going to be. And when you're working with a group of people whose work you admire and who you just actually have a lot of laughs with on a daily basis, it's the reason you got into the business, not to do a television show, but to be with a group that's as creative as this. And I find now going back into the business in a different way, I'm just finding different groups, that there are a lot of people who want to work in the same way.
Well, Blair Brown, I think it's time to hear you sing.
When Sonny gets
blue. Before Molly Dodd, our listeners may remember you starred in Altered States and One Trick Pony. And one of your roles was in the Joseph Papp production of The Three Penny Opera.
That's right.
And I want to play from the cast recording of that.
Oh, God. Yeah, they're still available? They must be out of print by now.
Well, I've had mine a while. But this is you in the Jealousy duet.
Oh, shrieking away, yes. It's very high, this part.
It's very high.
Very high. It's the original scoring, you know? We were loyal. We were faithful.
Was it hard for you to go this high?
It didn't seem so. We'll hear, won't we? We'll find out.
Okay, here we go.
Come on out, you blossom of sorrow. Let us see your legs, my little sweetheart. I knew you have such a dainty ankle, but I'd love to see a more complete part. They tell me that Max is your behind you.
Blair Brown, circa 1976. that's really high. Different from how I'm used to hearing you sing when you do your little songs on Molly Dodd.
It's true. It was odd with that show. I ended up playing Polly as well and Jenny for two nights. I ended up singing all the parts by default. It was very funny.
Were you going for a singing career or for a music theater career?
No, actually the reason I got the job is I'd worked with the musical director, Stanley Silverman, at the Guthrie. I had done a restoration play out there and The Crucible and Merchant of Venice out there, and Stanley knew that I could sing because I was terrified of singing auditions. And in fact, I went to this audition as a complete idiot. I didn't bring an accompanist, and I sang a cappella, and I started to sing, and I started way too high, and I couldn't get anywhere near. So I said, I have to start again, and I started off really low. Now, anybody else would have just said, thank you very much. But I had worked with Stanley for a couple of seasons at Stratford, Ontario, actually, and at the Guthrie Boat. So he said, no, she really can do this. So we started, and afterwards I thought, well, I'll go up for musicals. But those auditions always terrified me. Acting auditions don't bother me in particular. But I was terrified by that. So that was the end of my musical career.
Blair Brown is my guest. She stars in the cable series The Days and Nights of Molly Dodd. More in 60 seconds. This is Fresh Air. Actress Blair Brown is my guest. Your father was in the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever know what he did when you were growing up?
Well, I knew he was with the agency. That's all I knew. And when I went to drama school years later, I went to a bilingual drama school in Montreal. That was sort of during the Vietnam War, the end of the Vietnam War. And I had to say that my father sold greenhouses. It was the only time that I'd been told that I couldn't say anything. In Washington, it was fine. I actually, when I was a child, I had to say my father was with the State Department. And then by the mid-60s, at least in the States, and certainly into the 70s, then you could say he was with the CIA. And that was the first time I ever met any of my father's friends from the office, was in the sort of early 70s. He'd bring the agency, then moved out to Langley. It used to be in town, and we lived out in Virginia. And my father would bring friends home for lunch. And that was the first time I ever realized that my dad had never had office parties, that there'd never been any. I thought, I didn't even realize the lack until then.
So during this period when you're supposed to say that your father sold greenhouses, what an improbable job to come up with.
No, the curious thing was that there was a whole other life at the agency. There was a lot of horticultural activity at the agency between orchid growers who had warm greenhouses and camellia growers who had cooler temperature greenhouses. And it also tended to divide up between Ivy League men and kind of state college men. It was a real class structure within the agency, which I know seems extremely bizarre. So my dad was a cold greenhouse camellia growing University of Pennsylvania CIA man. So it wasn't too much of a stretch, because in a pinch, he could tell you all about greenhouses.
But I don't get it. What were all the flowers for? What were they growing them for?
Just pleasure. Now, don't ask me why this group would single out flowers, but it was true of the agency at that time. I don't know if it still is.
When your father retired, did he tell you what he had been up to all those years, what kind of cases he was working on?
Well, it was interesting. His desk was Latin America, and he was just starting to write about some things because he was one of those unusual people that believed if you signed a piece of paper saying you wouldn't talk about something for 20 years, you actually wouldn't. And so he was just beginning to write about a lot of things, and then he died. So that was the end of that. And I found out that my mother actually got rid of all his old papers and all. So I don't know what he did, really.
Does it feel like a really big gap in your life to not
know? Well, it does, and it's interesting because I'm not a very political person. I think some of it has to do with growing up in a family where a lot of times when I was political, I'd have arguments with my father. He'd say, well, you're wrong, and I can't tell you why, right? Which is unbelievably infuriating. So I tended not to have a lot of political opinions also because I knew that there was so much more information to be had about anything if you were just a regular citizen reading the papers. There was a lot more information that was there that we didn't know, you know. What was the question again?
Oh, if it felt like a gap to not know what your father did.
It was very odd. It was very odd not to know. I mean, as a child, you take everything as a given. I thought that's how it was. But now in looking back, I do find it was very strange not to share in that part of a parent's life. I mean, my son is very involved in what I do and has a lot of opinions about what I do.
People magazine once described you as a debutante daughter. I was wondering if you were a debutante with a coming out party.
I was an actual debutante, yes, I was.
So you had a coming out party?
I did. I had a tea dance. Charming, huh?
did you want it, or was it forced on? Oh, wow.
No, I actually did. I was in a girls' school at the time, and that was the only possible way to meet boys, was to be a debutante. So it was that was the way to go. I lived out in the country, which sounds, you know, what lovely and pastoral, except it also means there are no people around. So I was very keen to be a debutante.
Did you later rebel against that life?
Absolutely. Scorned it, you know, now once I'd had the benefit of it, right? And it was easy to scorn it.
So how did you rebel?
Well, it was a different era. In those days, I took a lot of drugs, which is, you know, it's a different time now. Now once you feel very cautionary about talking about it at this time in the world. Yes, I lived a fairly bohemian life. I had a child. I never married. Nothing now that's of any consequence, but at the time they seemed fairly big deals.
What about acting? How did you start to do that? Was that what you were planning on doing when you were younger?
No, that was actually completely by default. I was in school and I was miserable and I wanted to take some time off, and that concept was something my parents couldn't wrap their minds around, which I understand now being a parent. And so I had to find something to do. I thought, well, the alternatives are continuing in school, that was out, going into business, doing what, you know, I couldn't imagine, getting married, that was sort of anathema, and didn't see many likely candidates lined up. So it was really on a whim. I thought, theater school. Now, I had done the same number of plays that most people had, one or two things, and I wrote to all the schools in England for some unknown reason, and they had just had done their series of auditions. So I had a friend of mine's brother and sister-in-law were buskers, you know, those singers, street singers in London. And they got me a job on a program called Ready, Steady, Go, which was go-go dancers and singing to pop tunes in London. And so I told my parents, I'm going to England. I'm living with these buskers and I'll do this show. And my dad talked to some friends of his in the Canadian embassy. And before I knew it, and this is the only kind of aggressive thing like that he'd ever done in intervening in my life, there was a ticket and an audition to go to a theater school in Montreal that was bilingual, that was classical Michel Saint-Denis, the sort of Juilliard training, because there was no Juilliard for actors at that point. And I went up and I auditioned and fell in love with the city and got in and then went and thought, well, I'll do this for a bit until I figure out what I want to do.
So I have one last question for you. I should explain. You're in the New York bureau. I'm in Philadelphia.
That's it.
We're talking long distance. So I want to know if you wear your hair like Molly Dodd does or if you have a different hairdo.
No, the thing that's really good is that you can't see what I look like on radio. I didn't really go to a great deal of trouble to dress up for this. Pretty ratty looking. Molly is much tidier person than I am. She also has a fleet of people keeping her that way at every moment.
Blair Brown, I want to thank you a lot for talking about
this. Oh, thank you.
Blair Brown stars in the Lifetime cable series, The Days and Nights of Molly Dodd.